You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
This is Enterprise Bit Radio and your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Fit Radio here on EPN, your location for health and fitness information for the busy entrepreneur. And as we all know, without good health, you cannot be successful nor productive. Today we are speaking with Dr. Diane R. Gayhart, PhD, an accomplished practitioner, professor, and researcher of psychotherapy. Her new book, Mindfulness for Chocolate Lovers, A Lighthearted Way to Stress Less and Savor More Each Day, describes how to live a sweeter life. And Dr. Gayhart, thanks for joining us here today on EPN.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you're most welcome, and thanks for your time as well. So to kick things off here today, can you really meditate with chocolate? What's your take on that?
Absolutely. And most people, when they first hear about it, they think it sounds like a joke. But it's actually a really practical meditation, and I've had so many people say that this works for them. And so I can describe it a little bit if you'd like. So basically, chocolate meditation is based on eating mindfulness exercise that people often do when they're learning mindfulness for the first time. And traditionally, you do it with a raisin. And when I first started teaching mindfulness almost 20 years ago, like carrying those little boxes of raisins to do my workshops and conferences was just a hassle. They'd arrive crushed half the time. So I thought, what might work better? And I, being a chocolate lover myself, I thought about chocolate. And it's interesting because most of us have stronger emotions. We either really like chocolate or really don't like chocolate. And this works whether or not you like chocolate. And so as part of the exercise, you try to use all of your senses to mindfully first observe, smell, touch, feel, and notice it without trying to judge whether you like it or not. And I think the most useful part of the exercise, you actually hold that chocolate up to your mouth. And you just notice what your mind is doing. Are you getting, is there anticipation? Is there frustration? Is there dread? There's so many different emotions. And learning how to just, even if it's just 5 seconds, watching your mind struggle with difficult thoughts and emotions enables you to be able to do that better in real life situations. And in business, you experience frustrations almost every day for most of us. And this allows you to pause, slow down, notice what your mind is doing, and make better choices.
And I'd say that's a really different, unique, and creative approach on that. Good stuff. Now, tell us, what are some myths about happiness? Love to hear your input on that as well.
Well, unfortunately, we have a lot of myths in our culture about happiness, which kind of explains the rates of anxiety and depression. But one of the most popular myths that we have is that more money is going to lead to greater happiness. And this has actually been studied both in the U.S. and abroad. And unfortunately, there's a fair amount of research that says that's really not true. In fact, there's actually research showing that your happiness peaks at about $100,000, and then it starts to decline once you're making $250,000, which I think it just goes against what most of us tell ourselves every day. And so the key with money is once you kind of are able to meet your basic needs, afford a few luxury items here and there, that your money needs to go to really funding the things that we do need. But we do know helps with happiness, which is, social connections, meaningful life experiences, having a purpose, those things. Another really common myth that kind of goes along with this is that more pleasure brings happiness. And so many of us put a lot of time and energy into pleasurable activities, good food, engaging entertainment, sex, beautiful clothes, beautiful living space. Those are all pleasurable things. Unfortunately, our brains are kind of hardwired that whatever stimulus we get a lot of, after getting that message for long enough, the brain kind of ignores it. And so I think a good example is, my kids would love to have ice cream for dessert every day of the week. And if I gave them ice cream every day of the week, within a couple of months, they're going to, to make it special, they're going to, need chocolate syrup and whipped cream. And, and then after a few months of doing that every night of the week, you're going to have cherries. And that just keeps going and going. And we call this the hedonistic treadmill, which is, you know, after 2 to 3 months, whatever thing that was bringing you any pleasure that was bringing you a lot of joy, you're going to need to have more or have it in a different way for the brain to register the same amount of happiness.
And that is some full coverage on happiness. Really appreciate your input. I definitely agree with you on a lot of that as well. Now, in your book, you say happiness is a life skill. What do you mean by that? Touch on that a little further.
Well, and this concept comes out of Buddhist psychology and even today's Western kind of positive psychology. What we're realizing, it's not that happier people have better lives, is that they have better habits for how to perceive life and how to handle problems. You know, and a very simple way to think about this is that, you know, optimism, they are happier, and it is a habit that you can deliberately, consciously, you know, cultivate so that when problems come into your life, instead of always focusing on the negative part of it, you know, being able to see some of the positives and allowing you to solve those problems in a much more creative way. And, you know, the kind of the definition of a pessimist versus optimist is a pessimist sees these problems and struggles as kind of this is what life is and the happy moments are an exception to this, where optimists see good things as kind of the default setting of life and that the problems are an exception. And they realize it, and they're very realistic. Problems are going to happen. There are going to be conflicts in our lives. And so we need to find ways to meaningfully deal with this rather than feeling like, oh, my God, you know, here we go again. That type of attitude creates a lot more unhappiness than it does happiness. And that is a conscious choice that any of us can make on a daily basis.
Certainly appreciate your input so far today. We are joined by Dr. Diane R. Gayhart, an accomplished practitioner, professor, and researcher of psychotherapy. Her new book is Mindfulness for Chocolate Lovers, A Lighthearted Way to Stress Less and Savor More Each Day. It describes how to live a sweeter life, and she's joined us here today on Enterprise Fit Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, can you say more about befriending problems? Get into that if you would.
Yes, so the concept of befriending problems comes out of Buddhist psychology and positive psychology again, and it's very interesting when you look at almost every psychological theory out there that what it all kind of boils down to, when we have struggles, especially the bigger struggles in our life, we're having serious problems in our marriage, you know, health issues, losing a loved one, those serious problems. What our mind does is it tries to go into denial about what's going on because we're so afraid of feeling those painful emotions underneath. And so the concept of befriending problems is learning to allow yourself to mentally and emotionally accept what is without getting into blaming and what if or if only I had, which is where the mind, you know, it is going to naturally do that to some extent. You know, we are human. But as soon as possible, steering your mind and focusing on just accepting that this difficult thing has happened. And when you're able to accept what happened at an emotional level, a cognitive level, you're going to engage in a lot, you're going to have a lot fewer problematic behaviors like anxiety or depressive thinking or using substances to avoid that painful emotion, which is really what is behind many of our addictions and our mental health disorders, really all come down in some way trying to avoid this reality. And so the befriending process is learning to just let yourself feel it. It's terrifying, but I think we all know at some level, after you accept it, you feel it, it does subside. No negative emotion lasts forever. And the ironic, kind of the paradox that happens is that when you stop trying to avoid feeling those negative feelings, you allow yourself to feel them. And as they kind of move through and kind of wash through you in a wave, that you're able to much better respond to the problem situation in a way that is healthy, in a way that works. And it's really that initial, often it's subconscious fear of feeling that negative emotion or allowing yourself to actually think that negative thought like, wow, maybe this, you know, relationship is over, or maybe this job is over, or maybe, you know, I failed at something. When you allow yourself to actually just have that thought, have those emotions, they do subside, and then you're in a much better place for being able to deal with it in a way that's going to actually, you know, allow things to end as best as they can, given those difficult circumstances.
Another question for you, Dr. Gayheart. What do you mean when you say crazy wisdom is the back door to happiness? I'd love to hear your take on that.
Okay, well, crazy, you know, we have a lot of talk nowadays about mindfulness as a, and that's a very logical way to approach working on reducing stress. But crazy wisdom is actually a complementary practice that goes with mindfulness. And crazy wisdom is about using humor to point out the paradoxes in our life, being able to be playful with some of these problems, being able to laugh at yourself, laugh at how life is so crazy sometimes, and that ability to keep humor. Humor is so therapeutic, and I think we don't get enough of it. We need to have the right type of humor. We need to humor that tears other people down or where you put yourself down. That type of humor doesn't heal. But crazy wisdom is being able to use humor to look at the paradoxes in life, the ironic elements of life, and at our problems and at ourselves and how we all are quirky. We all have these quirky habits that, you know, we can be so invested in, and learning how to be able to laugh at life, laugh through struggling with our problems. And some of them do get so crazy and ridiculous. And that ability to laugh in a healthy way that keeps you accepting that struggles are part of life. And when you try to pretend that they're not there, you make yourself crazier than when you try to deal with them. And so crazy wisdom is about using laughter in a healthy way to relieve stress. And it really boosts your creativity in terms of how you go about solving problems.
Dr. Gayheart, really appreciate your taking the time to be with us here today. A lot of interesting insight and information and clever wisdom. And thanks for sharing some of this with our listening audience in regards to happiness. And certainly appreciate your input here for our questions here today. As we conclude, and in your book, you talk about developing fierce compassion. Talk to us about that as we conclude today.
Sure. So fierce compassion really does fuel our happiness. And fierce compassion is this concept that, you know, if you're just being nice and compassionate to somebody who's nice and compassionate back, that is just a good business deal, you know? But fierce compassion is learning to have compassion for people who are difficult, to have compassion in situations that are difficult for you and for others, and being able to open your heart to the things that scare you the most, to the people who have hurt you the most. And it is through learning that ability to be kind and compassionate and keep your heart open in those dark moments, that's really what keeps us human. It's what keeps us sane. It's what keeps us happy.
Well, I'm sure listeners want to know how they can connect with you and also to get more information on your book, Mindfulness for Chocolate Lovers, A Lighthearted Way to Stress Less and Savor More Each Day, and how they could actually pick up the book. Where can listeners get further details?
I have a website at Diane, D-I-A-N-E, and my last name is GEHART.com. And the book actually has a website with lots of free resources, including recorded guided meditations, worksheets from the book, and that is at mindfulnessforchocolatelovers.com.
And of course, that certainly works. Again, Dr. Gayheart, all the best, and thanks so much for joining us here today on EPN.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
And again, we certainly appreciate your time. We've been speaking with Dr. Diane R. Gayheart, a PhD, also an accomplished practitioner, professor, and researcher of psychotherapy. Again, her new book, Mindfulness for Chocolate Lovers, A Lighthearted Way to Stress Less and Savor More Each Day, describes how to live a sweeter life. And for all the details, simply visit DianeGayheart.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
This is the ePodcast Network.